C-minus 93. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Given the length of time that had passed without any of them talking about it, and since Dan wanted to make sure that Emma and Clark were as fresh on the details as he was, he began with an explicit rundown of the nature of Richard Walker's gut-wrenching hoax. A hoax which had been so internally consistent and so carefully woven around real and verifiable events that no one had questioned it, even a full year after Disclosure Day. This was in no small part down to the way the lie had been presented, dressed up as a secret, with Walker expertly leaving a trail of breadcrumbs that made it look like he had been caught red-handed. The whole world had read the details of the supposed find in Lake Toplitz, which Hans Kloster's letter had meticulously spelled out. The whole world was likewise familiar with the sequence of events which led to the discovery of two supposedly alien plaques off the coast of Argentina, whose vivid engravings were now as cross-culturally familiar as the Mona Lisa. There was still uncertainty as to the meaning of the 280-year timescale established on one of the plaques through basic algebra and astronomical representations, but the initially acute public fears over the meaning of a representation of Earth dissected by a crosshairs-like symbol had long since faded, thanks to a more recent discovery. As Dan went to great pains to make absolutely clear to Emma and Clark, Walker's hoax ended there. What came next, while indelibly tied to the hoax, was as true could be. The trio's strength and sanity had been pushed to breaking point on the fateful night when the lines became blurred, on the fateful night when Richard Walker's guilt-ridden assistant turned up at the McCarthy's home to confess that Walker had used Dan as a pawn to convince the world that aliens existed, ostensibly in a desperate effort to halt China's then-imminent plans for a permanent lunar colony and a Martian research base. Without the irrefutable evidence they were given, they would never have believed it. But with photographs of Kloster creating the supposedly alien sphere and plaques, with alternative versions of his letter, and with two blank plaques the hoaxers had retained in case of emergency, Dan, Emma, and Clark, who had all worked tirelessly to expose what they thought was a genuine government cover-up, had no choice but to accept the horrible truth. They had bought a lie and sold it to the world. Utterly broken, Dan had told Emma and Clark that there was no way he could keep it quiet. They had seen the pain in his eyes, and they had known that he meant it. The future looked impossibly bleak. But then came Lolo. Dan perked up during his recap when he reached the part about the day he was called to a cornfield in which he received a subconscious instruction to travel to a location which meant nothing to any of them, a relatively nondescript spot in the wilderness of Lolo National Forest, some 1,000 miles away. "You both thought I was crazy then, too," he said, throwing in a rare side comment amid his focused recap. At Lolo, both Dan and Emma were invited into a bona fide alien spacecraft, where they came face to face with two humanoid extraterrestrials. Via a cable connected to his neck at one end and an alien's hand at the other, Dan learned that the aliens, the messengers, sought to maintain harmony through what they consistently referred to as minimal, necessary intervention. The messengers admitted having interfered to curtail the launch of DS-1, a GSC-administered defensive space station, which would have ultimately been armed with nuclear weaponry. DS-1 only existed because of the hysteria whipped up by Walker's hoax, so Dan had no problem in accepting the justification for this intervention. He also learned that Richard Walker had been briefly abducted and advised in no uncertain terms that any attempts to destabilize the world by gloatingly admitting to his incredible hoax would draw a second and final personal intervention. "This is the heart of it," Dan said. "The messengers went to serious lengths to do what they had to do in a way that was consistent with the narrative of the hoax. But these aliens are real. It doesn't matter that the aliens in Walker and Kloster's story were totally made up, because these aliens aren't. You know that lying doesn't come easily to me, but this isn't a lie. Okay, a hoax got the ball rolling, but the messengers are real. They deliberately intervened in a way that didn't expose the hoax, and that's the only reason I can live with this secret. But our secret isn't that everything was a hoax, he went on. It's that everything started with a hoax. They wouldn't have had to intervene if the hoax hadn't led to DS1, but everything since then is legit. And remember the main part. They actively decided to engrave the third plaque in a style that matched the other two. That's the most important thing of all, because they've now shown that they're willing to use the communication symbols and methods that Walker and Closter established first. To put it as simply as I can, the messengers are willing to speak to us in the language of those first two plaques, just like they're willing to use Kerguelen as an important site. They want to communicate with us again, but they want to do it without exposing the hoax. As Dan intimated, when the third plaque had been discovered in a Salzburg storage locker the day after Dan and Emma conversed with the messengers, the plaque's location and the identity of its lucky finder had made perfect sense within the context of all that went before. The third plaque, created by Walker and Closter, but truly engraved by intelligent extraterrestrials, provided convincing context for the first two, and it was a context which explicitly quashed all fears of hostility. The lie came true, Dan said. I know it was a lot easier when everything was black and white and all we were trying to do was expose what we thought was a cover-up, but this is the situation we're in. I don't want to get too caught up in terminology, but I can't just sit here and listen to you tell me that it was all a hoax, because these aliens aren't as real as the nose on your face, and they're coming back. Clark nodded slowly. I obviously know they're real, man. Fair enough, I didn't get into their craft, but I was at Lolo too. I know the message on the third plaque was engraved by real aliens, and that even though it wasn't part of the hoax, it was inspired by the hoax. What I don't get is why you think they would do something like this at Kerguelen. There's something they need to tell us, Dan said. We know their M.O., minimal, necessary intervention. They don't care about human constructs like truth and lies, and I can't imagine they give much of a shit about our stupid politics. We don't know if minimal, necessary intervention is part of an unbreakable moral code, an edict, or whatever else. All we know is that they live by it. Planting a third plaque was the least invasive way to calm the shitstorm caused by Walker's lies, and it was the least invasive way to make sure we wouldn't feel like we had to try to launch another nuclear-armed space station after DS-1 failed. That's why they planted it. This bolide at Kerguelen was so public and so visible that it can only mean they want to get everyone's attention. And quickly. Clark looked at Emma. Do you get what he's saying? There's not all that much to get, she said. I was face to face with them just like Dan was, and it's definitely true that they went out of their way to stop the DS-1 launch without revealing themselves. And it's also definitely true that after Lolo, they went out of their way to calm everything down without destroying everyone's sense of reality. That's a word Dan didn't use, but it's an important one. This whole narrative has been the basis of everyone's reality for the past year. When one person finds out that their entire concept of reality is built on a lie, that's a very difficult thing to take. But when a whole planet finds out... Dan leaned back. So you're both finally coming round to the reality that this wasn't random chance, it wasn't a false flag, and it wasn't a PR stunt? You're coming round to the reality that they really are telling me something? It looked to me like they were trying to tell everyone something, Clark said. An explosion over Kerguelen isn't exactly subtle. Emma? Dan asked. I've got one question, she said. You said that if the messengers do something that hints at other locations, you'll know where to look, yeah? Dan shrugged. Yeah? Emma held his eyes. Look for what? Dan rose to his feet, stepped behind the desk, and pressed his fingertips against the wall. It parted at the center to reveal itself as a false wall, and in doing so, it exposed a room-length magnetic whiteboard, which was overflowing with scribbled notes, rough drawings, and paper printouts. As Emma and Clark looked up at it, all in stunned silence, Emma's hand covering her mouth and Clark's eyes darting around uneasily, Dan sat back down beside them. I knew something like the Kerguelen bolide was going to happen eventually, he said, drawing a line in the air from one side of the wall's annotated workspace to the other. That's why I'm ready.